Connor Contemporary Art is pleased to present Discuss 5, Leo Villarreal in conversation with Molly Donovan, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the National Gallery of Art here in Washington, D.C.
Origins includes both principles of the game of life and Newton's laws of motion, and the Newtonian component is newer for you. So I wondered if you could talk about your use of the old model and with layering it with the new model.
Sure. The game of life is a set of rules that a mathematician named John Conway came up with in the early 70s, and it governs a matrix of points, and the points can either be alive or dead, one or zero. It's a binary system. And each point looks at its nine neighbors to determine whether it should be alive or dead. But out of this, these rules, this very complex patterning emerges, which I found a lot of inspiration in. And a lot of the patterns are, you know, look very organic, like something from nature. And at other times, they're sort of these technological formations that they produce, like a logic gate that can test a condition. So it in a way, it's a, you know, functions as a very simple computer. So I actually did pieces that were portraits of Conway's life early on. And my code has been evolving over the years, and I've been able to create rules of my own that create compelling patterns. So the newest thing I'm dealing with are the laws of motion and physics and things from Newton. I'm not a big expert in physics or mathematics, but I'm interested in rules and parameters. So I take these things without really knowing a whole lot about them, and I plug them into my software and see what happens. So I have a system, like a matrix of points or a particle system, and I apply these parameters and kind of let things happen and hope that something emerges from that.
So what can you say what from the laws of motion you have used in this work?
Well, they're parameters like, you know, certainly gravity. So there's forces being exerted on the particles, attraction, repulsion. The particles have mass, so some are heavier and others are lighter. So when I set them loose, some may fall. There are things like, you know.
So velocity's in there.
Velocity, acceleration.
Yeah.
You know, there's friction as well. So I don't really understand all that stuff. I play with it, and that's kind of my approach to it, is to get my hands on it.
To tweak it.
Yeah, physically, like, use it like a, you know, like a material.
Right.
So that's the way I kind of go at it, instead of kind of having this idea that I know what it is and how I'm going to do it and then executing it. It's definitely not the way I work. I set up the conditions, and I kind of play around in that environment.
Using it as inspiration and as a model to extract from.
Yes, yeah.
So when you talk about mass and acceleration, just to review our little high school physics here, for those who have forgotten, the second law of motion, I have it written down here, the relationship between an object's mass is its acceleration, and the applied force is force equals mass times acceleration. So that would be the second law of motion that you're tweaking in your work in that particular,
yes,
using those particular aspects.
It is, and it's in there in the software.
Yeah.
Again, I just sort of know it through playing with it.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about the code is that you can create situations that you can't necessarily create, you know, here in the real world.
Right.
So you can do things like negative forces, you know, lights that suck light away,
right,
instead of adding light, and there's all this stuff that you can do because it's a simulation.
Right.
So
sure.
You can really start to
an
go beyond
of the idea, and not, yeah, a literal translation of the principles.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of boring. Anyway. Yeah. So, is it impossible to repeat the pattern, or just really unlikely in the sequencing of your programs. Can you talk about that?
Sure.
Is it, in other words, is it, and also another layer into that question, is it related to chance in any way? Because you are programming things, so there's a control involved.
But yes.
What's left up to chance?
Well, there's, again, I set up the conditions, and then I let it run, which is very much in keeping with, you know, the interests of the field of artificial life, where you create the conditions for emergent behavior. So you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you can kind of weight it in favor of creating something interesting. Mm. So that's what I do. And I, you know, it's almost like, you know, growing a plant, or, you know, you're pruning a bonsai. You can kind of like have an idea of, you kind of want it to grow like this, but it's going to do its own thing. And you have some influence on it, but you're letting it do its thing.
Right.
So, for instance, I'll set up some rules. I'll see a pattern on the computer screen, and then I'll grab that moment. So I'm recording, you know, almost like, you know, you're on safari or something, or in the, you know.
When you say grab, what do you mean by that? Do you amplify it then?
I capture that moment, so I record it, and that becomes part of the sequences that you see in the piece. Whereas there could be a way of the piece being generated live by the computer, you know, in real time. I haven't become comfortable enough with the computer to trust it to do things that I think are interesting visually all the time to kind of let it do that.
Right.
So what I've done is I have this model where I capture these moments, I record them, and then I play them back, but I play them back in a random order for a random amount of time. So you never know which sequence is going to come up or how long it's going to play. And then there's another layer of crossfading between sequences. So Sometimes you're seeing two sequences at the same time.
So you build chance into the programming.
Yes. So as a viewer, you may be seeing the piece and you may recognize a certain phrase or a moment in the sequence. They'll never be the exact same progression. So there's no loop. It's not like a video loop at all.
Right.
And I found that to be, I've been using this technique for many years now, and I found it to be, and to produce good results.
So did you play a lot of video games when you were a kid?
I did, you know. I certainly loved Pong, and we had every generation of, you know, video game system. And I am interested in early video games and little blips and dots and how, you know, a little triangle can become a spaceship and this jagged rock thing, you know,
Star Wars?
Asteroid.
Was Star Wars interesting to you?
Yeah, I was into all that stuff.
And Big Bang Theory and all that.
Yeah. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about the Wrath of Khan and the Genesis device. Which is...
Can you talk about that?
In the Wrath of Khan, there was a sort of device that they could shoot at a planet.
Star Trek.
Yeah, Star
okay,
Trek.
Okay, for those who are not Trekkies.
I'm not a huge Trekkie or anything, but this definitely caught my attention, this sequence. It was one of the first uses of particle animation in the movies. And there's a sequence of a planet going from this kind of rock out in space to becoming this kind of fertile environment with these lush oceans and mountains and all these things.
Mm.
So it was really this idea of life developing, and you could see it happening before your eyes. And that, lately, I've been thinking a lot about that.
Well, it's in the work, for sure. I mean, it seems to be evident in this piece, Origins.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And did you study mathematics or physics in school, or?
No, unfortunately. I kind of had a series of not so great math teachers and physics teachers and never really got into it and ended up more in
art. I'm with you. Blame it on the bad math teachers.
I'm sort of catching up now and, you know, but on my own terms and, using it as inspiration. So.
But the computer programming part of it, is that, where did that enter your education?
You know, I had an Apple II Plus way back when, and, you know, I was a bored kid, and my dad got me a computer, and so I started making these programs, and extremely kind of low resolution graphics.
At that point?
Probably 13.
Wow. So really young playing with computers.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I kind of lost interest until computers got really cool again in the early 90s with things like Photoshop and being able to edit images and video and virtual reality is what kind of brought me back into the technology world.
And so when you were in graduate school, is that when you were, that re-entered your work?
I started getting interested after I finished Yale and I studied sculpture. Computers got really cool and I spent about 2 years working with them. After
school.
Yale. I went to graduate school at NYU in the Interactive Telecommunications Program.
Yep.
So that was this place where sort of mad scientists gathered. And this was in 92 and there was no web.
And fertile ground for
it was great.
Programming.
It was great. And, you know, I learned enough to be able to make my pieces, but I came at it as an artist and, you know, went on to a research lab in Palo Alto, and so I really got immersed in that whole world, but learned enough to make my work.
Right, and I wanted to talk a bit about your influences, and, you know, it's kind of known that Burning Man has been an influence, the kind of sky aflame and your work in relationship to your work with light. I wondered if you could
when
that was how that...
I went to Burning Man for the first time in 1994, and there were about 1,000 people there. And this is an event that happens in the Black Rock Desert of Nevada, where it's parched earth with nothing growing, you know, for hundreds of square miles. So it's very, you know, there's this lunar aspect to it, and a real blankness, which is what appealed to me. It was just nothing. And how suddenly there was life and people gathered and you know, a city emerged from this. And now, 13 years later, it's grown to about 40,000 people and become a serious event. And it's the sixth largest city in Nevada for that week. And so it's a real city. And it has streets and its own media and all the, you know, but it only lasts a week, so it's very temporary. So again, I think the rules that make that possible and encourage people to come and participate, that's one of the rules. There are no spectators allowed. You have to participate. You can't leave anything there, leave no trace. And all these things, again, is like it's a system, but it really works and encourages people to really make things and share things. And it's been a great environment for my work.
And the actual motif of the whole event, though, is this Burning Man in the sky.
It's a sculpture.
It's a sculpture
created by Larry Harvey, and it's at the center of the community. And it's abstract, very kind of non-denominational.
Yeah.
And on the last night of the event, it's lit on fire.
Yeah, made out of wood.
So, made out of wood.
It's kind of
it has neon inside of it, so it is lit.
Okay.
And in the early days, it was the only kind of point of orientation in the community. So that was another important thing for me, is this almost this beacon and this point that helped you get oriented.
Right. Light source.
Light source.
Yeah.
And I ended up creating my own light sculpture, the first light piece I ever made in 97 for the event. And that...
What was that like?
It was 16 strobe lights that were sequenced with a very simple microcontroller, and I built up sequences of zeros and ones. Zero is off, one is on, so lists of 16 numbers. So it was really at the lowest level that you could get in terms of computing. But this very elaborate thing came out of that. It was almost like the piece was talking. The other part of it was seeing it in the desert from, like, you could see it up to like a mile or 2 miles away. So really, this is kind of the shimmering thing. And it was
really strong,
as if it was trying to communicate something.
Huh.
But it was a language, and through the different patterns, it really felt like it was, you know, much much more than what had gone into it.
Right. Right. And Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, yeah, certainly.
Lights, Las Vegas, the Strip.
I've definitely interested in Las Vegas and in Times Square and these big displays. I like.
Did you see them early on? And, you know, do you remember, do you have memories of these works?
Sure. Yeah.
Having a strong impact on you?
Definitely. I went to Las Vegas when I was fairly young. And, I think I'm interested in removing the logos and the text and all those things and really just getting into the light itself. Almost as if you're looking at a fragment of one of the signs. And,
right.
And I've used some of these similar materials like chaser lights, which have this very simple sequence where you have one light and the next and the next and the next. But somehow our brains find that compelling. We like to look at that and it attracts our attention. And
well, they're hypnotic, and there's that quality to your work and to this piece, to Origins, mm-hmm. absolutely, where you just want to watch it. You can just look at it endlessly and, you know, kind of be mesmerized by it.
Well, what with the chaser lights, there is information there. There's some sequence, so that's even more compelling to us than just a flashing light. There's more than just a single light. So there's a pattern there. And in some of my early pieces, I decided to add more intelligence to that sequencing. And how can I add more to those, using those exact same chaser lights?
Right.
So this is in line with that. This is, you know, many years later, and the code driving it is a lot more elaborate than this chase pattern. But a lot of those fundamental ways of using light have, you know, become part of what I do.
Right, and artists who you've looked at, artists who use matrices that might be similar to the way you use the grid.
Well, certainly, you know, all the great, you know, Terrell and Flavin, interesting to me, and some of my contemporaries, Peter Halley, of course, love Halley, rule based work. Repetition.
Right, so not just light artists, but Peter Halley, who is a painter, who, you know, uses a system mm-hmm. in his work.
Yes, I love big painting, and that's how I think of these things. I mean, they're dynamic and ever-changing. So I like a lot of work that I necessarily wouldn't make myself. But
that you think relates somehow parts of
yeah,
that's what I'm getting at, like other artists who's thinking in a different medium, mm-hmm. even like Halley, but
like Saul LeWitt, certainly,
right,
you know, any kind of rule based work is very compelling
his wall
to me.
Drawings,
sure, a system where you have a set
directions.
Of rules and it's very simple and this is what you do and then this whole like thing comes out of that,
right?
So I like that, stripping things down, you know, to the minimum, and then letting it build up from that.
Right. I wanted to talk about how this work is related, but also, you know, different than some works that came before. So the white lights you've used at PS1, the installation on the facade, and also at the Albright Knox in the installation in the Bunshaft building. But this is an interior piece that's on a wall. It looks very different. It doesn't have the kind of just the cascading effect that, you know, it's moving horizontally and vertically. But I want to ask you about the ways in which it is different.
Than the outdoor
and
pieces.
Related. Yeah, and related.
Well, the first, I'm interested in. Well, this piece in particular, I really wanted to work with white. I've done a lot of pieces in white, and for me, it kind of, while I love color, it really focuses the attention on what I do, which is sequencing and programming. And, you know, I like constraints, again. So this is another one of the constraints, but it pushes that further, and that was my goal. With this, it's very similar to what I did at PS1. That was a grid of white lights. It was 16 pixels tall by 40 pixels wide. So this piece is 20 pixels tall by 80 wide. But a lot of the patterning is somewhat similar.
Okay.
And it is similar to the Albright Knox as well.
Yeah.
In the grid formation. And there's a a wide spacing between the lights themselves. This is, I'm always playing with the density of light, and this is a 4-inch spacing. So your brain has to kind of make up the in-between, you know, space.
Right, and it is white, but you can at times see color in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you pick up, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just that optical effect yeah. of looking at light and then sometimes closing your eyes and seeing there's a red mm-hmm. or pink, mm-hmm. but sometimes you see it on the actual work.
Yes. I do have control over the brightness. So I have 255 levels of brightness, and I'm doing a lot of plays with, you know, the negative space. The lights that aren't on are as important as the ones that are on, or I may have created an effect of depth by doing something that's very, very dim, but then a brighter layer on top. So those are the different tools I have to create these
right.
sequences.
Right. Just wanted to ask if there's anything else you want to add that I haven't asked you about, talking about origins.
Yeah. You know, I think that's... I guess we'll see where it leads, really, is what's interesting to me, because I feel like this is... I'm starting to feel like I need a larger array. You know, I've been making these pieces that are very small, like 8 by 8 pixels, and now I'm up to 20 by 80 pixels, which is still, you know, a far cry from, you know, a megapixel, which is a million pixels. I mean, we're talking about 1,600 pixels here. But I'm starting to feel ready to deal with a larger array, and not that it's going to become video-like or, you know, it's still going to be abstract, but I'm feeling like I'd like to see what it looks like with more points.
So scale?
Scale, yeah, definitely. Interested in larger scale, higher density of LEDs, and the software just seems like there are infinite possibilities with it. And that's the thing that I've really pushed this time around is really creating new tools that I can work with, and it seems like there's an incredible energy in that area with lots of people creating amazing tools and in a great community that you need to draw on to help me do these things.
Right, the technology, the timing with all the development technologies, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
Great, well, it's a beautiful work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Leo Villarreal's show is on view from November 3rd until December 22nd, 2006.